Tupou driving hard at the line. Tupou, has he done it? No, it's play on. They go wide. They go wide. They get the try. It's O'Connor for Queensland.
G'day and welcome to another episode of Rugby Fixation. Had a little bit of time off, had to let the dust settle after the magnificent Ben O'Keefe joined us for a great chat about refereeing, but I've backed up, and you'll no doubt agree, with some absolute legends of the game. This time in the landscape of draft rugby, I've got Harry and Nelson Dale of draft rugby fame, and these guys I really want to have on to chat about some of the Wallabies players, because these guys, I think, have crunched more numbers and seen more stats and data on Australian rugby players than anyone in the current Wallabies setup. So really stoked to have a chat to you guys. Harry, Nelson, how are you guys going?
And Nelson here, guys. Yeah, no, awesome. Like, it's just been such a good month for rugby, and we haven't been on the podcast. And as soon as you reached out to us, honestly, we're grateful to be able to get the chance to come and chat with you. And I mean, it's a really good month to be an Aussie rugby fan, and we've seen this belief building with not much to show for it in you know, recent times, and it's starting to come together. So it's really exciting to be a part of this.
Yeah, thanks very much for having us on, Rev. We love talking footy, obviously. So any invitation, we will jump at it, and it's always fun chatting to you. And mate, speaking of the Ben O'Keefe pod, it was a little bit of a surprise to me, to be honest, but it was one of my favorite podcasts of the year. I freaking loved it. He was so fantastic to have on. It was a fantastic pod. And it's one of those ones that you can come back to at any time. So I hope people that haven't listened to it do go back, because it is fantastic listening. Really, really enjoyed it.
Cheers. Look, the amount of feedback I got from that, I was like, gee, 42 episodes, and that's what I'm getting feedback on. I think it must be him. But yeah, he was an absolute legend. And I think just the knowledge that he brought to the game, the amount of stuff that he could provide insight on that no one else really could, like, he's just at the coalface for so much of that. So that was great to chat. But look, you're right. I think we've all missed out on the opportunity to chat about rugby while the Wallabies in playing so well. And just, you know, the fact that we were speaking for about 40 minutes before we pressed record, just goes to show how much time we could spend talking about them. But I guess for this episode, what I really want to go through was just quickly looking at the rugby championship so far, having a bit of a look at how the Wallabies have fared, and I guess how that compares to what we thought before the season took off. And then having a bit of a look at something I put out on Twitter, which was, who are the top three players in each position? And then just trying to get a feel for which people, I guess, everyone agreed on. So which players are a lock as the best in their position, which players are a little bit more divisive and might need a bit more settling from, I'll say, three esteemed adjudicators, three people that I think are willing to make those heavy calls on behalf of the Wallabies setup. So I'll just go through the rugby championship first. I think since I've recorded, we've had a 28-26 win over the Springboks, a 30-17 win over the Springboks, which is the biggest win under Rennie's tenure. And then that followed by a 27-8 win over the Argentinians, which broke that record again with a 19-point win. So two really good wins back-to-back. I'll start by saying that I only thought we were going to get two wins this whole campaign, both against Argentina. So the fact that we've blown that out of the water is a great start. Harry, I'll throw to you first. How did you see Australia going before the campaign started? And you know, how are you feeling right now, knowing that we've got a few wins under the belt?
I can't say I was confident, if I'm being completely honest. I think we had, you know, for a long time, I've been writing this kind of idea that we have a very young side. They're not very cohesive. They're trying to learn what they're doing under Dave Rennie. I thought that there was a lot to look forward to in the future, but without a doubt, this has completely exceeded my expectations. I'm trying to keep myself in check. You know, whenever we lose, I kind of try and limit the damage in my own head and say, oh, you know what, look, this is all the bright side, and we're going to come good. It's just a work in progress. I think at the same time, I'm trying to do the same for our wins at the moment. I expected that we would get one or two wins against Argentina, and if we could get close to South Africa, honestly, I would have been pretty happy. Looking at it now, and I'm sure we're going to get into it, I think we've been a little bit blessed by the fact that Argentina are very underdone and have really had to start fresh, and South Africa are probably not what they once were as well. So I've been absolutely thrilled with how we've played, and it's exceeded all my expectations, but trying to temper some of my enthusiasm as well.
I think that's the big thing, is there's been so much talk already now of people nearly glossing over our next game against Argentina and saying, okay, so how many games are we going to win on the spring, 2 or 4? Yeah, 4 out of 4. That sounds good. And just really getting on the bandwagon, which, you know, I don't want to dismiss, given I'm a Wallabies fan, but I'm also trying to be a little bit realistic through it. Nelson, were your thoughts pretty similar to Mon and Harry's? And how do you think, I guess, as was mentioned, how do you think Argentina and South Africa are coping? Are we a little bit lucky to be versing a team that isn't quite at full strength?
Yeah, look, I think coming into this, I had a feeling that South Africa weren't what they were all cracked up to be in a way that, I mean, they're very good at what they do. And what they do is a kicking game, a very physical forward-based game that, you know, works very, very well against Northern Hemisphere teams. But the bogey side, you know, for them is a team that will run it back at them and actually have a crack. And, I mean, the Kiwis, we all knew, were going to be that side for them. And the Australians were trying to play that way, but over the Bledisloe, we didn't really put it together. So, I mean, I lost a little bit of faith over the Bledisloe. So I was unsure. Similarly, I thought if we got close, I'd be happy. I thought we might be able to sneak a win in that first game, seeing as, you know, the travel factor and a few other little factors there, but they'd come back in that second game and, you know, put us to bed and put us back where we belong. And I mean, I wasn't even that confident that we'd get the 2 wins against Argentina. I wanted to see improvements from last year. So I wanted to see at least 1 win, hopefully, you know, hopefully that second win. But they seem to have regressed a little bit in the way they're playing. And for us, I suppose it's a little bit helpful that Sanchez is injured and they've had a few changes and, you know, they don't have that cohesion. And, you know, something that's been so good for them has been the Jaguares with that cohesion factor. And that's something I think we're witnessing deteriorate over a little bit of time as they spread out, unfortunately. And I hope that they can build back up. But honestly, I think we've done better than I expected. But I can't be happier. And I'd love to say that I thought this is the way it was going to go.
And look, I think just on that, there is a bit of revisionist history. Now I'm looking back and thinking, oh, actually, we did have opportunities to win this. But like, we were looking good here or there. And I'm thinking a little bit more positively than I definitely was when I last recorded. But I think one of the things that I'm a little bit annoyed with is just the use of some players and the, I guess, dropping of some players by Dave Rennie. And he's obviously the man in the know, but I've been very vocal about how I think Harry Wilson should be in a 23 somewhere. So I just want to throw to that just throughout this rugby championship. Harry, has there been a player that you would have liked to have seen more minutes of, or just someone that we haven't seen at all that you just think is being hard done by?
Look, Harry Wilson's a very good one. I think he had another outstanding year this year. I thought last year he probably struggled with the step up to a test match footy at the end of a big year, but I thought this was honestly the time that he was going to make the jersey, number 8 jersey, his own. Credit to Valentini to hold him out. The other one I thought was definitely Will Harrison. Noel Alessio seems to have been given the keys to the Wallabies' future at the moment. And while I've got no problems with the prospect that he is and the fact that he's been backed, I quite like that. And I think he's been very good for the Brumbies. I think Will Harrison is the bloke that held him out of the 10 jersey in the under-20s side, pushed him to inside centre. And I think Will Harrison is probably the man in the 10 in Australian rugby that has the hardest job, and that is trying to direct around the worst Waratahs team in history. I'm not exaggerating. The stats are, without a doubt, the worst team in history. And I still think he looked good. He's an exceptional player, and I'm really disappointed he wasn't in the squad this year, particularly after being in the wider squad last year. I would have loved to see him get a little bit of minutes and just be tempted to stay and keep chipping away and just to get a gold jersey, maybe 1 or 2 caps off the bench or something like that behind L'Alessio.
Well, just on that note, I think one of your accounts on Twitter, Australia's Next Top Fly Half, that's going to come into play big time in 2022, because that's, I mean, it's the year for Carter Gordon, Will Harrison, Ben Donaldson. We've got young Liner who might get a crack, but I think we'll struggle at the Reds to do so. And even the two ex-Brumbies boys over at the Force, Bailey Kunzel and Reece Jan Pasatoa. There's so many young fly halves that are coming onto the scene and trying to push for a crack. And Quaid sort of come back and just, you know, blocked off one of those opportunities. But there really should have been a few more of them probably thrown into the Wallabies squad just to get some exposure. Nelson, the same question for you. Was there a player that you think you would have liked to have seen a few more minutes in? And out of those young 10s, is there one that you're particularly keen to see get some time in the saddle during Super Rugby next year?
Yeah, look, honestly, I'm going to echo both you. I really wanted to see a bit more Wilson. I can understand he's a little bit younger than the other guys, and maybe they're wanting him to work on a few different things. So, you know, put work into contact, things along those lines. And Will Harrison as well, I'd love to see him at 10. But I think it's really hard to say who that next 10 coming through is. And, I mean, you can't take 3, 4, 5 of these young guys into the squad. So they did have to pick, you know, one or two. I'm not convinced in Lolesio. For me, I could see him even being that sort of 12 role, smaller 12 role, trying to play something like a Liliafano or a Tamua at a 12 further down the track. And it is very difficult for guys in the Waratahs like Will Harrison trying to lead a very young squad around. And if we swapped him and Lolesio from the Brumbies and Tars, do we see Will Harrison get that crack? And I mean, I'm pretty confident you would. So I'd love to see him get at least a bit of time in the squad on this tour. But with Quade and O'Connor as options, it seems unlikely. The other people I'd love to see, I suppose, have been kept out really with injury. So there's not much that can be done there. Mm. And that's Parisi and Vunivalu. Parisi's been pushed down the pecking order for me with how good Ikitau's been. I've honestly fallen in love with the bloke in the last few weeks. His defence, his kick, his ability to finish in a couple of those tries through sort of relatively weak defence, but to find those gaps. And I just want to see...
Mr. Perfect, Lenny.
He is a lovable bloke. And Vunivalu as well as a kicking option, like cross kick to him. I just don't see anyone in world rugby potentially beating him in the air on a cross field kick. So he can also finish, and he's shown glimpses of what he's good at. And I really want to see him get a crack at some point. I think he'll be hopefully in the squad, you know, when we do the tour if he's fit. And then there's one bloke that I think, Rev, you're going to be, you know, echoing a little bit, and that's Fraser McWright. For me, he's the future at 7. Hoover's proved he deserves to still be there, and he deserves to be the captain very much more so now than ever. But McWright's going to get a crack at some point, and he deserves a crack at some point. And he's a player I'm very excited for. So I hope we drip feed him. I hope we don't, you know, get to a position where Hooper's injured and he gets thrust in and has to play all the time. But he's a player that I've got my eye on definitely moving forward.
Lovely. I mean, he's, yeah, I think Reddy's even come out and said that he is just someone that's just fallen victim to being behind the captain. And, you know, it's forced players like Liam Gill to go overseas and Sean McMahon to have to adapt. And, you know, he too went overseas when he couldn't squeeze in behind him or Pocock. But just on some of those players we mentioned, I think Parisi and Vunivalu definitely two that would be getting game time if healthy. We were chatting before the pod started that in all of Dave Rennie's squads that he's named so far, he's listed 71 different players and 44 of them have gotten game time, which is good. It clearly shows he's got an idea of who he wants in his team and what sort of players he wants to be using. But with 27 players, I guess, having been invited in but then not used, I guess what I want to see is, are there players that are in that list that you really think should be getting a crack sometime soon, or even someone that's not on that list that, you know, you'd like to be seeing getting a call up into the squad maybe next year if they do have a good super season? Oh, sorry.
I'll jump in. Look, honestly, part of me really likes the fact that there's 27 blokes that have been in that squad that haven't had game time, because my favorite thing that Rennie's been doing is he's been making people earn the jersey. And it does frustrate me that, you know, Parisi's injured and won't be there, and that Will Harrison hasn't been in the side, and Harry Wilson's been sent home. But at the same time, I do think that with such a young Wallabies team, number one, we need to build some cohesion in the top 15 or 23, which is what he seems to be doing. Number two, we need to say to the next guys, you need to be playing the house down and you need to be ready-made test match players if you're going to make this side. And I think that's a fantastic message that is going to do well for Fraser McWright in the long run. It's going to do well for your Pane Fa'amau Sealy's in the long run, you know, a player that no doubt could come off the bench and play 10 or 15 minutes and get his first couple of caps. But instead he's going, I've got Taniela Tupou and Alan Alatoa in front of me. I'm going to have to become one of the world's best props if I'm serious about getting game time here. What more motivation do you need if we're going to be serious about building a squad that's ever going to be able to compete with New Zealand in the long run? So, yeah, there is a couple of players. And as I think we've mentioned a few of them, at the same time, there's a bunch of players in those squads that I was completely surprised were ever in the picture. But yeah, all in all, I think my takeaway is really I love the fact that players have been made to work for a jersey.
And Nels, is that pretty similar for you?
Yeah, look, I think I touched on most of the guys I'd love to see. I'd like to see Pony getting a crack, definitely off the bench, if we don't have Alatoa back this week as well. And there's a number of players that I think, you know, have done enough maybe to get a crack, but I'm really liking the way Rennie's working this squad. We're a couple of years out from a World Cup and, you know, there is a limited amount of tests, Rev, you probably know how many, between now and the World Cup. And we've really got to be building, you know, our core players. We're going to be building our spine of our squad. And I think that's something we're doing moving forward. We're really kind of building our hooker, our 8, our 9, our 10, our 15, and trying to find who is a lock in those positions. On the edges, you know, wings, we've got options. Fullbacks, apparently, we don't have options, but we're, you know, we've got the likes of Pataia, you know, putting his hand up, moving forward. He played a bit there at school. I'd like to see him get a crack, but again, I don't want to see him rushed in there. I think we're making people have a body of work, as Morgan Tuanui says, before they actually get that run. And I think that's a really big positive for the culture and a really big positive for the work ethic moving forward.
That definitely seems like one of the massive things is just that culture and that really wanted to impress Rennie. I know in the last sort of few hours, Nick White's come out and said that, you know, he's really just trying to push because he thought that what they delivered last year wasn't to the standards that he thought Rennie had set and wasn't to the standards that they had really set for themselves. And they know that they can perform better given the plans that Rennie has and the players available. The one player I just want to shout out, because I don't think he's popped up on any of the, even the players of interest squads, was Fergus Lee Warner. He's someone I've just got a real soft spot for, and I'm hoping that he has a massive season because I know we're looking for that sort of hybrid lock six. Hannigan sort of had that role in his left. Rob Liotta's come in, and I'm not fully convinced that he fits that description. I think Lee Warner's probably one of the most hard-done-by guys, but we'll probably get to that a little bit because I want to discuss the top three players per position with you. And the reason why I was really keen to have you guys on to do this is through all my years of doing sort of draft strategizing and coming up with like which players do I need to be looking for in which positions and all that, I put this sort of list together and I thought, gee, this really mirrors just that sort of prioritizing which players I really want to build a squad around. So I'll just go through the theme for anyone that didn't really get to see it on Twitter or didn't have the interaction. I posed the question of who were the three best players in each position. So not just the three best props, but the three best loose head props and three best tight head props. Same for the locks. I wanted specifically who would the six best locks theoretically be, because we want three in the four position, three in the five. And just really want to get through and see, well, who are the best 45 players in everyone's opinion? And just from there, sort of whittle down which players appeared in everybody's list. Because I get, you know, through Twitter, I think it's the Holy Grail. I think everyone on there's a genius and they know best. So I think that's probably the safest spot to go to for opinion. And I was really delighted. So we had 64 different players get a mention, which, you know, when you're filling 45 spots, I think that's pretty good. There's a few players that are divisive. But out of that 31, so nearly half of them, people have locked in as their go-to. So I thought we'll just go through the positions with you guys and just see how on board we are. And if we were to try and pick sort of the three best in each position, or maybe getting that idea or that frame around what a World Cup squad might look like, who are the ones that are probably going to get a call up? So we'll start with a nice, easy one. Loose head prop. The only three options people listed were James Slipper, Angus Bell, and Scott Seo. And so they're the three best in their positions. Guys, clearly there's not really much argument for that, is there? Is there anyone else that really rates a mention or might overtake perhaps Seo?
Not really. Look, I think Slipper's just got all that experience. He's been there for so long. Seo's that kind of in between. I think he was, you know, up there as one of the top props, really one of the loose head props in the world for a couple of years. He has, you know, faded away a little bit in terms of the level that he had reached previously, but Harry and I were talking about this. He could have another 30 caps in him, you know, moving forward, even more so. I think he's my age, 29, 30. He's got another 2-3 years. Some will be off the bench, I'm sure, but as Slipper leaves, then he's probably going to be the main guy there sharing it with Bell. Bell is, what, 2021? So there's too much pressure on that bloke, even though he's been very exciting. And there's lots and lots of promise there. So to have a bit of experience around him currently with Flipper, moving forward with CEO, I think that's a perfect combination.
I think without a doubt that's the top position, right? But Tom Robinson hasn't been talked as a loose head prop. I think that's his primary position. And yep. He's someone that has really, really impressed me through Super Rugby again. He's obviously an excellent scrummager. And with Scott Searle's, I think, relatively speaking, dropper form, I think he's someone that we should be considering. And that doesn't even mention Cameron Orr, who's just been getting better and better with every season. So we're pretty blessed in that position, really.
I agree completely. And I think just on that, I'm going to skip hooker for now so we can jump to tight head prop, because the two standouts, obviously, Tupou and Alalatoa, they were picked in everyone's best three. And then there was a bit of alternation between Tom Roberts and Harry Johnson-Holmes, who I don't think has popped up in any of Rennie's squads yet, and Pony Farmer-Sooley. And I guess my question is, I think Slipper, Bell, Tupou and Alalatoa are locked in as the four best props and you take them in the World Cup immediately. If you can only take that fifth prop, I think surely Robertson or HJH pop into the frame just because they are versatile and cover both sides.
Yeah, look, honestly, I'm a massive HJH fan. I don't think the shift to tight head prop has done him wonders at the Waratahs. I think he really is a loose head prop that can play tight head, and he certainly can play it. Robertson, I am very fond of him from his time at the Waratahs. I think he was really, really good when he came through. He seemed to kind of disappear from our current thought process for a year or two. Now he's kind of popped back up. And for me, those two can really fight it out. If we've got the fifth choice, I mean, they've got more versatility than Theo for sure. And that's, you know, pretty important moving forward. Theo is going to be someone who would miss out because he is really only a loose head. Pony, yeah, doesn't have the experience, he doesn't have that versatility either. So Robertson and HH, I think, are really good options as a fifth choice, but they need to start getting some runs if that's the option.
And that's probably the concern, is that the tight head jersey, until Alalatoa went away for the birth of his child, it was just Tupou and Alalatoa, one starts, one finishes, but that was really locked in. Tupou, one of the only three players that has featured in every 15 of the matches under Rennie, so clearly he's in the frame. Alalatoa is clearly in there. It really is interesting that sort of that backup tight head, which you'd assume is Pony Farmer-Sooley based off being included in every squad, yet he hasn't got any game time. So I think that's probably the one decision they have to make for prop. Hooker's a complete toss-up. So I think what we'll do, just to make it easy, we'll all pick one, because we threw this out there. There wasn't a single hooker that was universally picked in everyone's top three. The hookers selected were Fleddy Kaiatu'u, Falau Fainga, Brandon Pangaramosa, Jordan Yalesi, and Tolu Latu, despite Tolu Latu being overseas. Look, with those five, there's so many options, but again, no one could really decide who was going to be that locked-in position. So I might throw to you first, Harry. Out of those five options, or maybe there's a sleeper that isn't even on that list, who's one hooker that you think has to be in the top three?
Yeah, I would just start by saying I think this really just depends on the eligibility rules. Tolu Latu and BPA obviously aren't going to be in Australia, so the picture's made a lot easier for us if they're not allowed to be selected, and I can't imagine that'll be the first position we bring back because it is so tight between all these players. Personally, I'm not going to pick Kaiatu'u. I think he's probably the bloke that everyone just like puts the magnifying glass on everything positive he does and deletes from their memory anything negative he does because of the fact he's a Western Force player. Good player, don't get me wrong, might end up being the best of the lot, but not there yet. So for me, that means it's out of Yalesi, or some young gun that you might back, like a Lachie Lonergan, who has obviously had a bit of game time as well. I think for the immediate future, if I'm picking between those two, I'm probably picking Fainga.
Nice. So Fainga's locked in. We got one hooker down, two more to go. Nelson, who's the second hooker that you'd like to see in that squad?
Yeah, look, I've got similar issues with this whole squad here. I think no one's really locked themselves in. Fainga, as Harry said, offers something that a lot of the other props, the other hookers don't hear. I think for me, I'd probably be bringing Brendan Pangaramosa in as my second choice. He has that experience, recent experience in the squad, understands a lot about the recency in terms of culture and what the squad's trying to achieve here. It's a bit disappointing that he's heading offshore because I think this is a real key couple of years for him. He could lock himself in as the starting hooker. He has his own failings. And I like the look of someone like Lonergan coming through. There's another young Brumby hooker coming through as well. But for me, I think out of that group, Latu, he makes too many silly mistakes on and off the field. And for me, I don't think that's going to fit into the culture of what we really need. Ulisi is a massive, massive man. Excites me every time I see the bloke, but doesn't seem to really fulfill. He's the prince that was promised but never fulfilled. And Kaitu'u, yeah, as Harry said, he could be a really promising hooker, but he's going to need to learn to throw the ball straight, which has been a difficult thing for Wallabies hookers for a number of years. So purely based on experience and, you know, work on the paddock, I'm going to have to go Brendan Pangamosa.
Very nice. So we got those two locked in. Look, this is a complete toss-up. I'm looking at the three options remaining, and if they're all available, I guess I prefer Latu just because of what I saw him do at the World Cup. I don't know if he can be more than a tournament player, though, because we've seen him sort of struggle with off-field things before. It really is just that World Cup really proved to me that he can deliver when he needed to. But I'm going to go left field. I think Dave Parecki is the person I've seen offer the most. And I know he's not on that list of options, but I think if we're picking off the Super Rugby season that we've just seen and we're picking off, you know, experience, what he can offer, I just think that he's probably someone that's got the right mix of the tight sort of set piece work, but also doesn't mind getting a few carries involved. He is sort of like your knockoff store Cody Taylor in that regard, a very, very knockoff store version of that. But I think if there's someone that I've seen, someone that I like the look of, it's probably him.
Look, I'm surprised you disrespect that your followers like that and pick someone that's not on the list. But no, I quite like the look of Parecki. Harry and I and a few of the other boys from draft were talking about him pre-season, you know, before he turned up to the Waratahs. And I thought there was some promise for him. He did show a bit of promise for this year. I mean, we saw him break the line down the wing. You know, he was pretty good around the paddock. He was pretty good with his line-out throws and his consistency with that sort of thing compared to some of the other hookers. He really is a hooker that, you know, should be among the names that are here for sure. Whether he's the one who's going to stand up and be a long-term option, I'm not sure he's a long-term option. But, I mean, he definitely could fill that void for the next few years as a consistent hooker. We're going to talk about it, I'm sure, when we get to fullback. You know, there's people that have certain positives and then there's someone who, you know, is a safe option. And I really think he could be a safe option in the hooker ranks.
I think Australian rugby is, their issue with hooker is not that we don't have any good hookers. It's that we have about literally eight hookers that are within 5 or 10% in terms of performance. Yep. And, you know, we still haven't talked about Alex Murphy, for instance. Like there are so many players that if you put any of them in, they're going to almost mirror each other's performance, that it's just ridiculous. And I think what we need to do is just pick and stick. But the biggest thing is for me is that as the rule stands now, you can pick two players from overseas that don't have 70 caps. You can't tell me, surely, and I want to hear from you two, are either you picking Latu or BPA as your two players?
Nah. And I think it just got touched on. We've got these five listed here. There's another five that have been in squads and not given any game time. Like if we look at Alex Murphy, Dave Parecki, Tom Horton got a look in last year, Connell McInerney. Like we've got so many different players that have, you know, been given a bit of an opportunity but then haven't been able to deliver. You throw in Lockie Lonergan, there's 10 hookers, you know, that are all, as you say, playing at about the same level. We're getting sort of 6 out of 10 performances, maybe a 6.5 to 7 every now and then. We just haven't seen anyone sort of shoot the lights out more than, you know, one game in a row. And I think that's the big issue. It really is just going to be 2022. Someone stick their hand up because Rennie will pick you. Yeah.
I suppose that's the tricky thing for me here, Rev. How would you play this? If you were Rennie and you were picking the Wallabies hooker, I mean, we've already touched on building your squad, building your spine moving forward. The hooker is part of your spine. It is a very key position with the line outs, with other things they do around the field. I think you need to get bulk caps into one of these players. It's simple as that. I mean, you could pick one and stick. Someone like Latu, for me, is a huge risk with some of the silly things he does on and off the field. someone like Fanga, I really, really like. He needs to clear up some of his stuff on the field. But you could just pick one of these guys and stick with them. And that's probably your best decision. Whichever one it is, you stick with them for a bulk amount of time. So if you had to pick one out of any potential position, or any potential hooker, who would it be?
I think it's going to be Philip Fanga. And I've just sort of looked back to the 2019 World Cup squad where we had spent all this time developing Stephen Moore and Tatafu Palotta now. And then 2017 came along. They retire or go overseas. And then we're left with no options. So we're racing BPA in to start against Ireland. And just, you know, he held up all right. But just, you know, he got sort of three caps and then wasn't seen again for a while. Philip Fanga had to fill in and just didn't have any experience. There was no one to lean sort of or rely on, I guess. And so when we got to the 2019 World Cup, we got Philip Fanga coming in with 11 caps. Tolu Larcher, the most experienced, with 15, and Jordan Willessi with 4. And they were the three hookers that were supposed to sort of guide us through. So I guess because those three are still in circulation, you could, I guess, make the case that they should be the three that, you know, we develop and give time to. I know that when we look at the hookers at the moment, I think Philip Fanga has just cracked 20 caps. I'll just have to check to make sure that's right. Yeah, so he's just hit 20. So he's our most experienced hooker. Really, like, that's nothing compared to a lot of the other players. So, I think you're right. I think Philip Fanga is probably the one that we need to give some time to. But at the same time, he's probably the one that's least likely to get minutes at Super Rugby level, given the competition he's up against. So it does make for an interesting sort of debate there. We'll get to the locks, just because I think this is a little bit easier. Again, depends on the rules that we've got available. But the four locks that were picked in every single squad were Matt Phillip, Darcy Swain, Isaac Rodder, and Lucan Salakai-Aloto, which is handy because they're the four locks we've used this year. Leota, Caden Neville, Trevor Hosea, Ned Hannigan, and Nick Frost got a sort of mention, but sort of sparingly. The two that really stood out were Will Skelton and Rory Arnold. Now, these two aren't currently eligible. They're overseas. They might be looking for the spring tour. I think if there's a situation that they're available, we pick them. But I guess this comes down to if we're only picking sort of four locks in a squad, we've got Phillip, Swain, Rodder, Lucan Salakai-Aloto. Who are the four that you'd end up picking, assuming that Skelton and Arnold would be, you know, automatic picks? And maybe they're not. Who are the four locks that you'd pick, Harry?
I honestly don't think anyone knows, including Dave Rennie. And I think he's already said that a couple of the locks are going to stay at home. So then that way Arnold and Skelton can be drafted in for the Northern Hemisphere tour, because that way, you know, these players have been on the road for so long that it gives them an opportunity to see their families. You know, Matt Phillip, particularly the Rebels players, Matt Phillip is the one that stands out to me. He's been on tour forever. He's probably one of the top locks in my eyes, but I would leave him at home purely based off the fact that if you're going to have an opportunity to bring those guys in, he's the obvious one that's been on the tour the longest. But let's say I had to pick them right now, just purely on speculation, which is all it can be. I'm probably picking Phillip, Rodder, Skelton, and Arnold.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm going to pick LSL, Lucan Salakai-Aloto, over Leota at the hybrid option.
Yeah.
So then that way I can sneak someone in.
Nice. No, that's pretty fair. And I think, just as you've noted, Phillip does deserve a bit of time off. He's, as well as Tupou and Hooper, the only players that have played literally every game under Rennie. So it's a massive workload. Obviously, Rennie really likes him. Swain is probably one of those players that could be one of the ones discussed as, you know, just having benefit with a full preseason because he's young. He's done a great job this year. He's actually fit the Rory Arnold role of sort of swimming through mauls really well, but you know, he's a young guy, so getting some minutes under his belt at Camp Brumby would be pretty good. But I do start to wonder if some of these players are looking at Salakai-Aloto, Hunter Paisami, and thinking, no way I'm leaving this camp, because as soon as you do, someone's coming in and taking my place and never getting the jersey back. So it does make it interesting, but I do like that we're all sort of in agreement that Phillip, Rodder, Skelton, and Arnold would be the picks if we've got the opportunity. And I think Salakai-Aloto does fit that sort of lock and six role quite well. I know Alex Tarr and Tala Masudu, they both vouch for him as a six. So, I mean, if they do, then I think I should as well. I think back row is probably going to be a bit interesting. the top three in each position is probably quite easy to do. So we could probably make the task a little bit harder for ourselves, because the World Cup, you normally take maybe six back rowers. If you're including Sakalotto, that'd be your seventh. So who's sort of sticking out as these options? We might just go through the different positions each, but Nelson, out of those blindside options, who are the blindsides you'd like to see sort of locked into this Wallabies squad?
Look, to be honest, I think at the moment we're probably looking at some players that can cross that 6-8 realm, you know, between those two positions, but are a line-out jumping option. And I think that's something that really looking at this Rennie squad, what he's done over time, he seems to be picking a six that can jump. He doesn't want a six that's not a line-out option. I think that's something that in the Checker era, you know, with Pocock and Hooper together, you have two freaks, you're going to want to put them on the field, but you lose that line-out option. And I think our line-out has been more solid in recent times. And that's, you know, very largely to having some back rowers that can jump. Keeping that in mind, I think Valentini has been filling a really good role as a 6 or 8. So for me, I think hands down, I have to be taking Valentini. I love his physicality. I have to be taking McMahon. If he can fulfill what we assume he will fulfill when he gets that crack, I have a little bit of doubt, not necessarily in his performance. I have a little bit of a doubt in what will happen with him over the next few years. He's played very little rugby in the last 2-3 years since leaving. He was a player that I absolutely fell in love with when he was playing. I think Australia's youngest rugby sevens player representative. I think he was drafted in as a 17-year-old when he got his first crack rather than going to schoolies and came into the Wallabies. For me, he's the perfect, you know, bench, maybe over a Samu, because he can cover that 6, 7, 8. I love Samu as well, but for me, McMahon just offers a little bit more there than Samu. So Valentini and McMahon. Swinton, I love his role and his role playing, but a role player is not necessarily what I want to take to a World Cup squad, I don't think. You know, leading into a World Cup or years previous, if you want to have a physical back row, he's probably the man to do it. But I just don't think he offers as much versatility in that squad and doesn't have as many highs as, say, Valentini and McMahon.
I'm just so glad that you said that, because I think I'd cop a lot of flack if I was, you know, trying to get rid of the only other tire in there other than Hooper. So I'm glad that it was a New South Welshman saying that. But I think what I probably should have mentioned is out of all the options listed, we did have 7 back rowers that everyone had as the, you know, top three, whether it be 6, 7, or 8. So Rob Valentini, Sean McMahon, Michael Hooper, Fraser McWright, Harry Wilson, Pete Samu, and Issy Naisirani. So Lockie Smith only missed out on, I think, 1 or 2 squads. Most people had them in the top 3 blindsides. And I guess the question here is, given there's 7, if we're trying to cut that down to 6, you know, I'll be the Reds fan and say that's probably got to be Fraser McWright that gets dropped, just based off, you know, no one's going to start over Hooper, and you've got McMahon and Samu that can cover 7. Harry, do you have any argument to that, or do you think he's probably got to be the one that gets dropped if it's...
Mate, I was thinking the exact same thing as you guys were going through the squad. I think we learn a lot from putting Ben McCallman at 7 many years ago now when we I think we had Pocock go down and there was no one else in the squad. I think we're blessed that McMahon and Samu could both do an excellent job at 7. They're just such freak athletes that are so versatile. Because of how versatile they are and the fact that they could cover it so well, I would drop Fraser McWright right now, knowing that he's probably going to be my starting 7 for the 2027 World Cup in, I'm going to put it out there, in Sydney, definitely not Queensland.
Yeah, look, I do like that so many of these players that we're listening sort of have the asterisks of, yeah, they're good, but just, you know, not yet, because we've got so much talent coming through, and it seems really chalk and cheese to what we're saying, I guess, after Super Rugby Trans-Tasman and after, what is it, Nels?
The tricky thing is, for me, the other asterisk is Naisirani. I mean, he's been a player that we've really, really enjoyed in recent years. Last year, he was dropped to work on a few different, you know, his own work-ons to get fit, come back. He came back. He had one match that he started in that 8 position, and then he was drafted out for Valentini. And I think if we look at how Rennie's been picking, you know, his sides, especially when he's been picking his spine, he's been looking for someone to fill a role in or fill that position. And once they've filled that position, maybe other than halfback, he's sticking with them. And that's, you know, all right across that spine. And he gave him one crack in that starting jersey to prove himself. He's now out of the squad, heading offshore. We won't get to see him over the next couple of years. For me, that's a big thing. You know, we have the versatility of Valentini, Wilson, McMahon, who can all play eight. Samu, who can play eight as well. So he's another name that is an asterisk. We're going to see McWright moving over the next 2 years and improving. And we know he's a part of the long-term plan. I don't think Nesserani is part of the long-term plan, you know, especially if he's not sitting above these other current players that we're talking about. Wilson's our long-term eight. Valentini is an option as our long-term eight. McMahon's an absolute freak that can do any position in the back row. I don't see Nesserani as our long-term eight. So for me, I think I'd prefer to get McWright in the squad and developing with this squad and giving him a little bit of time here and there. I don't think there's as much benefit if we keep Nesserani around.
And that's a good point, because he won't have the same exposure. So it does give a chance for McWright or Swinton or Liam Wright, Carlo Tozzano, Richard Hardwick. We've even seen Tim Antsi, Josh Kemeny, Michael Wells all in the squad. You know, there's a lot of back robbers that are on the periphery. And even Ned Hannigan, who's going to come back, whether he plays lock or six for the Waratahs remains to be seen. But I mean, I mean, it's funny because Rennie clearly liked him. And I think he started four tests at six last year. So he's got some pedigree there. And he did quite well in one of the games against New Zealand. But
he did.
We are also overlooking the fact that, you know, I think between 2018 and 2019, there were 13 players that debuted for the Wallabies, and a few got picked for the World Cup. So there's still a few players that might really unearth themselves over the next few years. But I think back row, I look at that, and there's so many options that I like that it's really a pretty settled field. And speaking of which, we go to the next most settled position beside loosehead prop, which is the scrum halves. I mean, Nick White, Tate McDermott, Jake Gordon. No one argued that. There was about 30 people voting and they all had those as the top three. I think the interesting thing will just be pecking order over the next sort of few years. I think White's established himself as the best at the moment, but look, I thought Jake Gordon did really well in his second test this year. I thought he provides a lot for the Waratahs and he can provide a lot off the bench as well. I've sort of got it ranked as White, McDermott, Gordon. Is that how we're seeing it across the board? That seems to be the hierarchy.
I think so at the moment. That's what it sits at. For me, I like the combination of, you know, your 9-10 playing together or your 8-9-10 playing together. If we've got a Valentini, White, Lolasio, or we've got a Wilson, McDermott, and O'Connor, you know, they're the sorts of things that when we talk about a spine, they have to link up and have those combinations, because you're going to get double, triple the matches together. I suppose they're both players, White and McDermott, who can fill a role for us. They're both exciting off the bench. I'm, as a Waratahs fan, a huge Jake Gordon fan as well. But right now, for me, White and McDermott sit on top. McDermott is absolutely electric, and he can finish a game amazingly well if we've got White starting with a kicking game and having a bit more versatility. But White showed himself that he can finish the game amazingly well, and McDermott can play well for good chunks of the game, and he's building his kicking game as well. I just think the thing right now that separates them is not just the kicking, but I think White's pass off the deck is more crisp, is quicker. And I think, yes, he's been blessed with an experienced 10 outside him in recent weeks with Cooper, while McDermott had Lolasio for the most part. But I just think he moves that ball that little bit quicker, and you know, that provides us that extra little bit of time. So for me, he's edging ahead of McDermott, who is one of my favourite players, I think, to take rugby field in all history. And I think will be a long, long-term Wallaby.
Harry, I'll throw to you for fly half, because I think we've discussed this a little bit already. You know, we were sort of tossing up Cooper and O'Connor are the two sort of mainstays, and then it's a bit of a battle between some of the young guns for that next spot. So because that is still quite up in the air, I guess, is Quade Cooper the kind of player that you want to see taken all the way to the World Cup? Like, he's coming in and filled a role really well. He's a little bit older. Is he someone that you're happy to keep banking on while he's performing like this?
He's 33 now, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
So he's going to be, what, 35, 36 around World Cup time?
35.
It's very old, to be honest with you. Like, that's a massive concern for me. I don't know if he can stretch his career that far, if, particularly when you look at what his career has been doing over the last few years. So I've been a huge fan of him being in the squad because it buys time for some of the younger guys coming through, and because he's been playing out of his skin and he's a great mentor. I honestly think we have probably the biggest issue right now is if James O'Connor goes down in a World Cup year, we really need someone as a backup at the moment. I'm not sure it's Quade Cooper, although maybe that's when you do bring him in as the injury replacement just to pull us out of a hole. Who knows? I think the next one is open. Now, we've talked about the fact that Lalesio, Harrison, Donaldson, there's so many good players below them as well that are coming through. No one's ready. No one's ready. So, no, I don't think I would take Cooper through, but I love the fact that he's there to mentor and buy us a bit of time as those young guys develop.
That's probably the big issue is we've got, you know, 5 games left this year. I'd love to see, you know, someone else brought into the squad for the spring tour just so they're around the environment. Lolasio, I think he's stuck on 8 caps at the moment. I wouldn't mind seeing him get to double digits. Just give him a bit of a chance, even if it's off the bench this week and against Japan, something like that, just to sort of ease him back in and hopefully get some wins under his belt, because obviously the high of France was probably settled pretty quickly with that Bledisloe series where he didn't really get the chance to shine. Nelson, are you of a similar position that, you know, Quade doesn't necessarily make it through to the next World Cup?
Yeah, look, I think he could be almost a role player if needed, you know, like someone to close out a game. He has shown he has a maturity now, but he's not a player that we can rely on as he's going to be a 60, 70-minute fly-off. I think moving forward over this remainder of the year, O'Connor needs to get more of a crack there. I think he is the prodigal son returned who should be the 10 taking us to the World Cup. I don't think that's Quade. No matter how much I've really been excited by Quade coming back, I think 35 is a bit of a stretch. I love the thought of experience. Maybe he does get a nod in the squad somewhere if we're taking one of these other fly halves through. But I think you need to show a little bit of faith this season at the very least with Lolasio going on tour, unless they want to mix it up and bring Will Harrison, who hasn't played a lot of rugby, get him a bit more time. But to be honest, I think Lolasio is going to be that third choice for this tour, and he'll get a bit of game time there as well.
I think just on that, it is interesting because Lolasio is also one of those players that would benefit from another preseason just given the injury. So it's a tough decision now for how Rennie actually sees what would benefit the most. I was trying to make the argument that it is beneficial for Harry Wilson to stay back because he'll have more access to food, his own gym, like definitely better equipment, probably better sleep cycles. You know, like you do miss that sort of fun of the tour and that camaraderie and that team building. But I think there are some positives. So I do wonder how Rennie sort of weighs that up. But look, I think we have spoken about fly-off enough. There's a lot of exciting options, but probably not enough established options. And one of the stats that I think I put in the group chat a while ago was, since Quade and O'Connor made their debut, there's been 170 test matches. Cooper's played 73. O'Connor's, I think, 56. So, like, they're both less than half of them. It's just amazing to think what could have been if they'd actually been able to stick around and really develop into the saddle. Like, there's just so much experience sort of gone begging. And I hope that we sort of do a bit of a better job retaining fly halves this time around.
On the flip side, I mean, there's something to it, you know, when you look at someone like McMahon returning, who was really worried about his career ending. You look at both O'Connor and Quade, who said they've really just recently got their body right. Maybe if they had all those high impact, real physical games for another 4, 5, 6 years where they didn't get the bulk of games, maybe they wouldn't be here right now and they, you know, providing that experience to this next generation. They're pretty physical games, international footy, and you add another 50, 60, 70 on top of a guy who's already 32, 33. Maybe he doesn't make it to this point.
And I think, to be fair to that point, a lot of the players have said how good overseas travel's been, like Matt Phillip, Isaac Rodder, Nick White, Quade Cooper, Simon Karevi. They've all sort of gone overseas. Michael Hooper's probably even the best example, just having that time off, coming back and being refreshed and just, you know, absolutely being able to nail it. So maybe that time off is a good thing. It's just interesting. I was doing a bit of a deep dive and seeing some of the teams we had in 2013 and 14. I mean, I loved Matt Timur and Christian Lafano as options back then. Nick White was back in the squad there. And, you know, a lot of the players we still see sort of now and over the last few years, but just never really got enough time or consistent selection. So I am hoping that we keep this group of players and can do something with them, because I think it's an exciting group, but I've been excited by squads before and they've not really stood the test of time. The wings are interesting because Bataille has been listed as a wing. He's been picked in every squad anyway, so he makes it in somewhere. But between Corabetti, Dalgunu, Callaway and Tom Wright, they do seem pretty settled on those guys. Muirhead and Vunivalu are the only ones that have sort of been listed elsewhere but didn't make the cut. I'm keen to see Vunivalu, but is Muirhead a realistic chance, or is he just sort of the next best but probably won't get any game time? Nels?
Look, there's something about Muirhead that for a long period of time, I just couldn't buy into him. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's his size. I don't know if it's his style of play or what it is. But honestly, he has really impressed me. I'm not sure if he's a test quality winger. I suppose we don't know if we don't give him a crack. But if you had to pick between the two of those, I mean, we've brought Vunivalu off and brought him over here as an experienced winger who can definitely be amazing in the high ball. He knows how to finish. I think he offers a broader style of play and a little bit more flair. Mind you, that you can argue that Muirhead is a flair style player with his step and his agility. But I think if you had to pick between the two of those, it's got to be Vunivalu. I mean, there's a lot pushed into that basket for him, and I want to see him get a crack.
I think he's got the weight of expectation, so there should really be some chance afforded to him. Harry, I'll throw this one to you. With Muirhead, he was a little bit like the Simisi Masarewa of our fantasy group this year, where he actually started beating a lot of defenders, but no one was really that keen to pick him up just in case he played to expectation. Is he high up on the list of your fantasy options for outside back next year?
I don't think he's ever going to be high up in my list of outside backs. And it's not because he's not good. I think, as you said, his issue isn't how good or bad he is in fantasy footy. It's that no one can work out how he's as good as he is. He breaks more tackles, scores way more tries than we ever thought he would. So I think he's a really good player. His issue is that he's 28 years old. Vunivalu is 25 and they're paying in something like $800,000 to $1 million a year. Who do you think they're going to put in their squad? It's not going to be Muirhead. The guy's a great guy by all accounts. He's a talented footballer who exceeds my expectation every time he takes the field. He really won me over this year in the Brumbies. I thought he was excellent, excellent, excellent. But there's no way I would put him in my World Cup squad with the amount of options, good options that we have in the outside backs, particularly in the wing. I just can't fit him in. Can't fit him in.
The biggest interesting thing out of this is, the World Cup was 2 years ago and we took one winger to that Rugby World Cup. We took one winger and now we're talking through, you know, what, six, seven names of people that we think could really fulfill that. And we're not even talking about Parisi, who, you know, showed at the Reds in the early part of his career. He could be a winger as well. You know, he's fulfilling that role at outside centre. But the exciting thing about all of this is that we actually get to talk about actual genuine wingers and finishers. By the time, you know, the World Cup rolls around, Pataia's got a couple more years into him. Maybe he will be the product we all want. Maybe it's a 15, maybe it's a wing. It's not at outside centre, I'll say that. But we have some exciting players coming through in the wings, and I mean, it's going to be a good thing to watch.
I like that you mentioned the last World Cup, because I've got the squad up again, and you're right, like, we didn't pick any wings. But also the number of players that just came back for the World Cup, I'd love to just have them all playing in Australia this time around and having a bit more of a settled side, because looking at the back line that we had, Genier and Nick White, they were both fresh from overseas stints. I think Genier had at least had the season in Australia, but White was just sort of fresh off the boat. Foley, he was the incumbent 10 for the whole Checker era, but then the year of the World Cup got dropped, was sort of second or third fiddle at times.
Crazy.
It didn't make any sense. And you're looking at players like Tamua, Ashley Cooper, Kirtley Beal, they'd all been overseas. DHP sort of playing on the wing, but then shifts to fullback once Folau's kicked out. Like, it was a real makeshift team. And I think that's going to be something that's really important that we just sort of nail this time around, is that players are sort of in their positions, but they're also, ideally, we sort of know the bulk of the squad before we get to 2023. And that's kind of what the idea of this activity was, just to see if Rennie's not taking notes, I can just forward this through to him and he might be able to pick the team from there.
But there's a big difference just on that between Checker and Rennie, and that is Rennie, as Nelson kind of mentioned before, is looking to pick the best team and to fill those roles, not the best 15 players. Checker was always a big fan in my eyes of picking the best players, and he didn't care where he put them on the park. It's just the big contrast between the two. And sadly, as much as I love Rennie, and I still will defend him very firmly in his role in New South Wales and in Rugby Australia as well, the more he got questioned, the more he dug his heels in. And I think it was his undoing in the back end. So
yeah, look,
I really like Rennie's planning and how he's going about his selections.
I think you definitely, you were saying you meant that about Checker. And he was a player that we really did, a coach that we really did love, the player he wanted to play for. But it seemed like as the time built and moved forward, we were seeing something that I think maybe we're going to see the, you know, Springboks go through at the moment, where they started to realize that they need to have a plan B and they're not equipped to have that plan B. And I think that's something that we've seen from the Springboks in these recent few weeks. Yes, it's only a couple of tests, but I think that was Checker's issue. He didn't have that plan B, and he just goes, let's chuck them all on the paddock and let them have a crack. Where Rennie seems like less of an emotional, more of a smart coach. And I think that's how he's going to pick his side moving into the World Cup.
I think the good thing for Rennie is he's already got the plan B, and it's just give it to Samu. So we'll use that to segue to the centers, because, God, he has just been an absolute shining light, a beacon of truth and hope, just coming in and sort of righting any wrongs whenever, you know, we can't get any go forward. He's just really there to truck it up and do a job that we haven't been able to really see done for quite a while. The three centers that everybody picked were Hunter Paisami, Samu Karevi, and Len Ikitau. And assuming we sort of take four centers, it probably leaves the door open for Matt Tamua if we go the experienced angle, or Izzy Parisi if we go the exciting dynamic option. Lalakai Fekete, Hamish Stewart, and Kyle Godwin also got a few mentions, but probably not enough to really warrant genuine selection just yet. Harry, between Tamua and Parisi, I mean, they're very different players, so it does sort of depend on what option you're going for, but who's sort of making the cut in your squad as you see it now?
You took the words right out of my mouth, to be honest with you. I think it depends on what you need. If you have O'Connor and then Lolesio, you're not sure if he's quite ready yet, I'd probably pick Tamua. Whereas in any other circumstance, I think I'd take Parisi just because he's an absolute game breaker. And I think he could be absolutely anything at international level as well. In my eyes, Karevi is the best inside centre in the world by an absolute landslide at the moment on current form. And I don't care who wants to rebut any player from New Zealand. I don't believe they're anywhere near him right now. That means that outside centre is the only other role you have to fill. That's going to be Ikitau, maybe Paisami or Parisi at an absolute stretch. But he's my guy, Parisi, I think, if I'm picking a fourth one at the moment.
It's nice to get a few more Waratahs in there as well. I mean, I like the idea of having that sort of inclusion. I think the good thing with Parisi is I think he also offers, as was mentioned earlier, that wing option as well. He could shift out there if needed. Again, you do kind of, you want your players to have their best position set, but if they can be versatile at the same time, just in the event that there is, you know, a lot of injuries or whatever happens, it's not a bad sort of string to his bow. Nelson, you're the same. You'd be picking Parisi in there.
Yeah, honestly, I would. I'm a big fan of Matt Tamua, and I was really talking him up coming into this international season, despite his form at the Rebels, where he wasn't really helped by the players around him. I think we might be witnessing a bit of a downward trajectory for him. He's not going to have a lot of experience around him again next season. So he's got a lot of pressure there. I agree. I didn't think Karevi was the 12. I thought he was the 13 until he returned and just absolutely molested anyone on the field that tried to look at him wrong. I just think he's got to be locked in as your 12. But in saying that, if he's not there, you've got the likes of O'Connor who can shift into 12 and provide a bit of the maturity to Lolesio there as well. So I think Parisi's the man for me. He's a genuine finisher. I just think we need to see him get a bit of a run at this level. I mean, he seems like he's he sort of turned his life around in you know, only 12 to 18 months to be very switched on and keen for rugby when he seemed lost to rugby for, you know, a bit of a period there. And this is what he's saying he wants his life to be about. So he needs to have a crack before I'd be picking him in the squad above to Amua. But, I mean, he's the guy I think moving forward will take that position.
And it probably leads to the discussion before about how many games do we actually have to the World Cup. There's probably only somewhere between about, you know, maybe around 25 tests to go. And you would ideally like your players having around 20 to 30 caps of experience at least, just sort of to keep them going. So the sooner he can get in there, the better. I'd love to see him get a crack against Japan and on the spring tour, but whether he's fit and healthy or whether he's actually seen as an option remains to be seen. I think with fullback, we've got a lot of options. There was one that I sort of forgot to put down that someone mentioned and I'm not super sold on, but we had seven people listed in here between Reece Hodge, Kirtley Beale, Tom Banks, Jock Campbell, Izzy Folau, if we're going to bend all the rules, Jack Maddox and Jesse Mogg. So probably six serious options there. Mogg, maybe not even a serious option, just based off, we haven't seen him in a little bit.
Can I throw on another not serious option? Isaac Lucas. I mean,
I was waiting for you to bring this guy back.
He was very young when he left, 21, 22. Mm. I think he is a dynamic, very exciting, very well-rounded player who could suit that 15 role very well. Yes, he wants to play a bit of 10, but I think he is a player with a little bit more experience that could be a very good option in that 15 channel. He can kick, he can run. I think he's an exciting player. So I'd like to see him in Super Rugby before he was brought back into a Wallaby squad. I don't think I'd be picking him from overseas. But if he came back and was fulfilling what I think he could fulfill, I'd love to have his name. But yeah, not until he comes back.
I'd love to see him sort of fit the whole Rodder role, and him and Hockings just get signed up by the Force, and you know, if they need more money, that's the spot to do it. Because
Tars,
I mean, if he could go to the Tars, it'd be a great fill for Maddox, who I think has left to go to Poe. But yeah, it's a shame because I look at that list and I just see it, you know, Mogg and Beale, great players in their peak, but both quite old now. Not sure if they're really still up for it. Jock Campbell, really exciting prospect. I think he's 25 or 26, so he's got a bit of the world experience, but he's got shifted to the wing and probably has a few defensive frailties that I think Brad Thorne really didn't want to risk at the back. And then Maddox, just all this potential. He got, I think, seven or eight caps, but then just hasn't really been able to settle if he's a wing or a fullback. And other people have even been mentioning him as an inside back. But yeah, I think it's going to be really hard to get someone else here between all the options. Hodge and Banks, I guess, make it in just based off default. Harry, is there a third option there that you want to see getting some time at fullback?
I'll go a fourth option, because I honestly believe if Maddox was in the squad, he'd deserve game time right now. Yeah. His biggest mistake ever was going to the Waratahs in their dip. he looks so much better at the Rebels, who just are not renowned to making outside backs look good. But, you know, the back three for the Rebels was playing for the Wallabies last week, so he could have been at 15 last week if he was still there. And that's a genuine belief. But the other name, if you know, you mentioned Campbell's defensive weaknesses, and this player is of the same ilk in that regard.
Oh, don't say it.
But if you're talking about fixing the problem under the high ball, which we all know is going to be a huge part of the next World Cup, we're talking about scoring ability. Marky Mark Nwaganitawasi, mate.
You're joking.
The future. The absolute future of fullback in Australia, because
no one else is.
So he's about a year or two away from being the best 15 in the country.
How much did Craig pay you to say that? I want to know.
If he learned to tackle, I don't have another reason not to pick him in the Wallabies.
If he learns to tackle, as a 23-year-old,
Craig got 70 caps before he learned to tackle.
No, Craig Cooper got 70 caps before they put him in the front line to let him defend in an easier position, because all he has to do is slow someone around him, and so the other players can fill in. Like, he's done that role perfectly. You put him at fullback and it's much tougher on him. Look, Martin Wanganiwasi shows some promise and some excitement, but he is so far from that conversation. I don't think he starts for the Waratahs next season. So, if he's fighting with Newsom, I'd find some guy playing park footy. But I think there is a third option. Yes, I think Maddox could be an option, but he's leaving, so I don't think he will be. I think that third option is Kellaway. I don't really want to shift him out of the wing at the moment because he's been doing very well. He sees himself as a fullback. One thing that he was quite frustrated with in his early days at the Waratahs, if you were seeing the sort of interview with him, he was saying he left really frustrated because he did not want to be playing wing. He did not want to be, you know, doing what he was told. He thought that's where he belonged. I see him as a genuine option at fullback. I wouldn't see him a genuine option at fullback if we had an absolute gun locked in there, because you don't really want to move players out of their position if you don't have to. But, I mean, he is someone that could be shifted there. If he gets a bit of time there in Super Rugby, it's going to be him or Hodge. You assume it's going to be Hodge for the Rebels. Pattaya is another very, you know, loose option there at the moment. Played a lot of time there at Schoolboys. So there are other potential options, you know, coming across from a relatively stacked wing cohort that could fill that role as well.
Like Nwanga Nwosi.
Like Nwanga Nwosi.
Look, various, like I've had the conversation a lot on Twitter. I do think that he's...
We've seen it.
He is someone that does a lot of things really well. But yeah, just the defense. I'd love to see him just have that sort of all-round game, because otherwise he does come in the conversation. But at the moment, I don't know. I think I'd trust Nels back there more, just because I know that he actually has tackled players before.
Yeah. Look, I think if you need your defense at an 8 out of 10 to be in consideration, Marky Mark's at a 1.
Yeah.
So I'm not delusional. Sorry about his defensive ability, but far out. If they could make him get that right, I'd just make him literally make tackles nonstop until that law comes through where it's 15 minutes of full contact per day. Made that, or per week, sorry, then he's making full contact tackles all day, every day.
That is the only thing he did this year, surely. They've gone, no longer any Lassie, you are not playing.
Yeah.
Just go tackle people every single day of the week. That's the only thing we care about. Here's a small box. It's 1 meter by 1 meter. Try not to get stepped or beaten. And then you move to 2 meters by 2 meters, 3 meters by 3 meters. And probably throughout the entire season, he's up to like a 3.5 by 3.5 meter box and still getting close to being stepped and missing tackles. But just keep doing that for another year and he could fulfill that role, Harry.
Look, yep. The crazy thing is he was playing sevens, and like he wasn't that shabby at it either. Like he should be good at covering space quickly and trying to get to people. But I don't know. I'm wondering if like maybe he's grown up in an NFL family. And so he's just saying, oh, the offensive team, that's great. All right, so I'll just do that and then hop off. Okay, defense comes in. Yeah,
I've got it from a good source that he does not have any interest in defending. So we'll see if that changes.
I think he grew up playing league for the most part. And you know how league is. You have 7 people trying to make an individual tackle and they count them in the stats of that 7 tackles. So he made 30 tackles a game, but he was the last bloke in touching the guy when he was on the floor. And everyone's going, he can tackle. Look at his stats. So that's how he got picked.
That's how he should learn. He just follows Carlo Tizzano around. He makes all the tackles. He just gets a little hug on the shoulder afterwards. He's like, yeah, sweet. Get the numbers up, coach.
Yeah, no, unique new plan is Carlo Tizzano stands behind him so he can stand in the defensive line, have a crack, and when you miss the tackle, either Hooper or Carlo Tizzano is going to make that tackle for you. So there is no worries. You don't need to be fearful. You've got people around you.
Nice. I like it.
We all agree. We all agree. Mark Nwanga Nwosi, 15.
Yeah, Carlo Tizzano fullback behind Martin Winner, the second fullback.
What I like about all this is that Craig did get in touch and did ask some questions, and it segues really well because we have mentioned his favourite player. for everyone listening at home, if Mark Nwanga Nwosi gets a Wallabies cap for the 2023 Rugby World Cup, I do owe Craig a beer, so that's going to be a great exchange. I'm keen to head down to Sydney and shout him if that happens, but I'm really hoping that he owes me one. But the questions, we've covered a lot of them just in conversation, but one of the ones I really like, and it sort of lends itself to that Kellaway discussion, is he asked, should all Super Rugby AU coaches be involved in the Wallabies setup? And if yes, would this not be a bit of a preseason expectation to bridge some of the gap? And I think one of the things that we can take from that is should the Super Rugby teams be adjusting their teams at all to try and accommodate the Wallabies? Like, if we want Kellaway as the fullback, should the Rebels be playing him there, or are they at liberty to keep picking Hodge there? So, Nels, I'll throw to you for that.
Look, I think it's quite a difficult conversation. And I mean, we've talked for a number of years that New Zealand has more of a centralised system where, you know, the national body has a bit more say over where players go, what they play, that sort of thing. But I think the biggest benefit for them that we can learn from is it's more about your systems rather than where a player plays. You know, I don't think the Crusaders were told by the All Blacks, play Havili at 12, you know, and look what's come of it. So I think the coaches that are seeing these players train together as a group should be the ones making these choices. I don't think it should be coming from the Wallaby staff. I'm sure they could suggest it, but I think they should be having, you know, a role in saying how your structures are run so that there's a little bit of unity across the five franchises, and maybe your fitness testing and other things that seem like are being more unified across all the teams. But I don't think they should have the final say.
Harry, are you in agreement with that?
All this just comes down to that alignment chat, right? That constantly happens between how much information transfer is there between. I think they need better, much better communication. I think that the state teams and the Rugby Australia side or the Wallabies side have gotten much better at having those lines of communication. But ultimately, I think you need to have coaches being able to make their own minds up if they're going to be accountable performance of the side. But I do believe Rennie needs to be able to say, hey, I want to try Petara at fullback. This is, you know, how I firmly believe this should happen, and this is his best position. Do you have a good reason not to do that? Do you mind making it happen? And then Brad Thorne needs to be as accommodating as he can be. But Brad Thorne's goal is not for the Wallabies to win. It's for the Queensland Reds to win. So, I mean, there needs to be a level of accountability to those coaches. So, therefore, they need to make the final call.
By recent reports, I think those discussions are happening. Apparently, Rennie's, you know, spending a bit of time chatting to the coaches, going to the different squads over these last 2 years. And I mean, yes, they've got to be accommodating for sure. I think if you look at a Super Rugby coach's role, if they're not winning, they're going to lose their job. So they're not going to be too worried specifically if they don't see someone fit a position, you know, as their best option to really give that person significant game time. And you probably want to see Pattaya have significant game time at 15, you know, before he gets that call up to the Wallabies. So is it better that they give him a couple games and don't give another player there who deserves the crack and mix your wings around as well, and then probably not get enough game time, you know, for wing or fullback for the Wallabies? And I mean, it can be disruptive, but I think there's got to be that open dialogue for sure, as Harry said.
And that's probably, he's one of the players that comes up. It's really, for me, Pattaya and Paisami for the Reds, and then Kellaway and Hodge for the Rebels. They're the ones that I'd just love to know what their best position actually is. I feel like we've seen Kellaway's best position. I think he's done really well at wing, but maybe he's even better at fullback. He just hasn't been given the shot. And then Pattaya and Paisami, I've got genuinely no clue. I really like Pattaya as a right wing, but if Kellaway's there, then he's going to have to try and get a fullback. It could be vice versa. And Paisami, he's second fiddle to Karevi or Ikitau, regardless of which position he goes for. So, yeah, some really big decisions, I think, for them coming through. Because we've gone through the whole squad, I really like that we spent nearly an hour just going over the same sort of crop of players. It looks like a good bunch. And plenty for Rennie to dissect as he starts to prepare his spring tour squad and his World Cup squad. But just to sign off, because I know two of my mates have already started planning their draft teams for next year, which is very early on in the piece. I just wanted to get some opinions because I can see one name in there that's going to be a top eight pick in our league. From this Wallabies crop, who are the ones that you're most keen to get into your draft team if you've got the chance? Harry, I'll start with you for that.
Samu Karevi, mate, if he's playing, yeah. Holy Jesus. Yeah.
He won't be playing.
I'm going to assume he's not. But if he is, I mean, he must be close to a first pick. I think he's top of rugby championship for defenders beaten, offloads, carries. Like, that's pretty handy stats.
All right, my second one, it's got to be Angus Bell.
Yeah, okay.
The guy's a country mile in front of every other prop in fantasy footy. The guy's an absolute freak.
Oh.
I think he's a top 8 pick. I think he is that good a prop that he is just get him early because he gets you points.
Yeah. I think the one thing that his competition is also Tupa. You've got a man who's playing pretty much 80 minutes every single week. I don't think Bell's going to get as many minutes. They're both potentially top 8 picks. The only thing that changes it is that there's two of them. But for me, you know, I'd love to include McDermott up there, but you've also got Gordon. You've also got White.
Now you can't miss the whole squad. Come on.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I go, he's so good, but there's, I think the halfback position is too stacked to be picking one of them in your top 8. Whereas we know there's a very limited amount of top scoring props, and Bell and Tupou are potentially miles above vast majority of other props. So they're probably the two that I'd have down.
Yeah. Nice work. I look at the list, they're the two that jumped to mind, but I think the last 4 seasons I've had Pete Simon on my team. There's something I love about him, and I know he's a bit rocks or diamonds at the moment, but I think he's also one that I'm going to aim for. He's not a top 8 pick, but yeah, Angus Bell, I genuinely think he's going to be right up there with the outside backs from the Crusaders as like some of the players you've got to get ASAP, which is crazy to say, but I just think that's the way we're shaping.
Did he go pretty early in ours, Harry? I think I had him relatively early, didn't I? Like extremely early.
We went in pretty early, but I think from memory, he was so far ahead in the prop ranks. Like Taniela Tupou is the guy that we keep picking early, but in fantasy footy, as much as he has big games, he's not consistently huge. Whereas Angus Bell was making some outrageous amount of carries. The way the Tars played, HJH and Angus Bell made more carries than the rest of the team put together.
Yeah.
And
so good.
Bell just makes line breaks left, right, and center. Like he's a freak of nature.
Oh, all right. I think that's the cue for me to start planning. Just even hearing the chat around stats and numbers, we've had 10 Fijians get named for Ndrua. So, yeah, I think that's time to start getting pen to paper.
Yeah, look, I think we've got to try to get someone from that Fijian squad on Ravalavu or someone like that, or someone from the Pacific Islander squad leading into it as well. So we can get a bit more of a deep dive into those two sides.
Oh, look, I'll be listening keenly for that because I think that's where a lot of the movers and shakers will be. Plenty of Fijian outside backs I'm pretty keen to get a look at. But
yeah.
Guys, really enjoyed you having the chance to come on and chat footy with me because, you know, as we were saying, it's been a long time since we've actually got a chance to just talk rugby and break down some of the players. So it's nice to be able to do this while the mood's quite high, while there's a lot of positivity around the squad, and you know, just while there's so many decent players to be looking into. So, Harry Nelson, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for inviting us, mate. It's been good to chat with someone who wants to chat rugby back rather than just shove it down the throat of any person I see on the street. Or at work. So I've really enjoyed the chat and what a time to be a Wallabies fan. You know, it's been a good few weeks and there's lots of promise coming forward.
Yeah, mate. Let's not forget the Rayburn Shield current holders, the Wallabies. Thanks for the invite, Rev. Really, really enjoyed it.
Absolute pleasure. All right. Well, I'll be keeping an eager eye on the games this week and hopefully can wrap up the Rugby Championship with another win. But keen to keep our discussion going, all things rugby. So if you've got any questions or feedback, please get in touch on Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Hooroo.